Let's let's chant number six. Right, that's where we are. Yeah. Okay. Kame riya samyamya.
Kame riya samyamya.
Ya aste manasa smaran.
Indriya tani mudhatma.
Mithyacharasa uchyate.
Karma indriyani, karma indriyani, samyamya, yaha aste, manasa smaran. Indriya tan vimudhatma. Indriya artan, indriya tan. Vimudhatma, vimudha atma. Mithyacharaha, mithya acharaha. Mithyacharaha, saha uchyate. He says, Karmendriyani Samyanya, the one who, having controlled his organs of action, okay, he's not moving, he's sitting even in contemplation, having controlled the organs of action, because you're relaxing your body, you're sitting still. You're not doing anything other than breathing, etc. So, karmendriyani samyamya yaha. So the one who sits, yaha aste, the one who sits having controlled his karmendriyas, his organs of action, but manasa charan, but remembering, while remembering with his mind, manasa with his mind, or by means of his mind, smaran, remembering indriyatan, all of the objects of the sense of the senses, all of the sense objects, all of the sensory gratifications, all of the raga dveshas, remembering all of those things with your mind, you know, sitting there in contemplation. So having controlled your karmendriyas, you're sitting very quietly, nicely, but your mind is very busy. So remembering smaran, present participle. So remembering manasa with your mind, all of these sense objects. That person, vimudatma mitchacharaha sauchate, that person whose mind is deluded, vimuda means deluded, is the self doesn't become deluded. So if they say vimudatma, it's not all of a sudden that the atma has become deluded, right? The atma can't become deluded, can't become ignorant, can't become anything, just simply is. So when they use atma, depending upon the context, it can be your mind or it can be your body, it can be any of the upadis, that any upadi, any conditioning adjunct you take to be yourself. I'm walking to the store, I'm thinking, I'm agitated, I'm happy. All of that superimposition is there, and so that becomes the atma. So the one whose mind is deluded, that one, saha uchit, that one whose mind is deluded because sitting in meditation, but only following the course of the raga dvesha, okay, of the likes and dislikes that are inside. So that person, that person's mind is deluded. Means there's no viveka there. Right? There's still ajnanam with no viveka, no discrimination there. And that person is called a mithyachara, mithyacharaha. Achara means a person's conduct, their achara. Here their conduct is false because they're sitting in meditation, but the last thing they're doing is meditating, you know. They sit in meditation on all of the things I left behind. it's a good verse, and Swamiji really has fun with this verse. But either of the Swamis would have a really good time with this verse. But you know, the problem is this: if the person's vimuddha means they don't have viveka, they don't have viveka, they don't have discrimination between the atma, between yourself and the anatma, that viveka isn't there. If that viveka isn't there, there is no self for them to contemplate on. So if I say contemplate, say the teacher says now, sit quietly and contemplate upon yourself. Well, yourself is this body, mind, sense organs. That's what is normal. Unless the viveka, the discrimination is there between me, the atma, the satchidananda atma, the self that is Ishvara, unless I have that knowledge, then my self is still this body, mind, sense organs who needs to become happy through the fulfillment of my raga dveshas. That's what it is. And so now say that person, so this is kind of a little twist for Arjuna, because Krishna is saying this, you know, because this is exactly what Arjuna wanted to do. He wanted to go and sit in the forest and sit and meditate, you know, meditate and gain this knowledge. And then he wanted Shravana and all of that, but just imagine a person goes, okay, I'm going to go and gain self-knowledge. I'm going to sit under the tree and meditate on myself. So what is that self you're meditating on? Because the self is totally suffering from what we call anyonya adhyasa. This word adhyasa is important. Adhyasa means superimposition. So if I say like the rope is the snake is a superimposition upon the rope. If I look at a post and I mistake it as like a man with a hat standing there with a cigar at night, you know, if I mismake that, that's a superimposition, right? That's not real. So it's a superimposition where the post takes on the characteristics of the man and the man takes on the characteristics of the post instead of actually being an existent entity there. So in this case, the superimposition, we say anyonya, means mutual. For an ajnani, until I have that viveka, until I have that jnanam, I take my body to be me the conscious being, right? I am the conscious being. That's one side of the superimposition. From the standpoint of my mind, your thought mind has no superimposition. I'm not a knower, I'm just conscious being. I am the knownness, the self-evident knownness, which the whole creation enjoys. But I'm not a knower and I'm not subject to ignorance from the standpoint of me. But from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs, I, this me, that is in fact Brahman, this me is taken to be the body, mind, sense organs. So I take on the qualities of the body, mind, sense organs, and the body, mind, sense organs get to exist and be conscious. They take on me, they become the conscious being, and I become the body, mind, sense organs. So that means I take on all of the limitations, I take on the nama-rupa, the name and form of the body, of the mind, of the sense organs, and I also take on all of their limitations. So then I become one who is subject to death, one who is sometimes happy, sometimes sad. You know, all of these, whatever the qualities of the upadhi is, I become that, and that becomes me. Right? So the way the body, mind, sense organs can think it's winning this superimposition, because actually I do become a conscious being, but I also become a finite one, you know, a limited, finite conscious being. So this anyonya adhyasa is, it's really no joke. It is so completely real. Even though the body, mind, sense organs are objectifiable, subject-object relationship, I'm aware of the mind changing, this thought comes and this thought goes, this thought comes, this thought goes, same with emotions. If a thought is coming and going, I really cannot be that, you know, because it's gone and I'm still here. I'm present to all of the changes that the body goes through. It's objectified. It really cannot be that. But that viveka doesn't take place. The mind doesn't think about that viveka. We only have discrimination between the things that we're objectifying. This is different than that. This is preferable to that. That viveka doesn't take place between subject, the subject and the object. You know, it takes place between the different states of experience. So teaching has to come along, the pramana has to come along and hold up a mirror and do these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies, so that you can actually recognize that's true. These objects come and go, and I remain, no matter what the experience, I am always there. That's a viveka. Once that buddhi is able to recognize kind of the two sides of the coin, or the to differentiate ultimately subject from whatever can be objectified, then I am left as conscious being, which is non-objectifiable, because I've objectified everything else. Once that takes place, then I can, if I'm sitting in meditation, I can turn the buddhi toward the subject, which is me. But until that viveka takes place, I can't turn the buddhi toward the subject, which is ultimately me, because that hasn't been discerned yet. It's still the subject and the object have this mutual superimposition going on from the standpoint of the mind. In that case, what is the mind going to be contemplating upon? Right? What will it contemplate upon? So it'll sit there actually not knowing what to contemplate on, you know. I remember so clearly having that experience. I was about 18 and some friends took me to see in L.A. actually, a Swami who, I don't even remember what his name was, but there was some Swami that had come to visit, and some friends took me, and we sat in the front row, and I also don't really remember very much about what he said, but he was saying a few things and talking about meditation, and then we were all invited, whoever was interested, to go to the house of the people who were hosting him and to receive a mantra. At that time, I didn't know what a mantra was. I didn't know anything. And so we were supposed to receive this mantra, and so I went, and it was my turn to go, and he was in his room, so I went into that room, and he had me sit down. He was at kind of a desk sitting on the floor, and I sat down in front of him, and he just told me that this mantra, the mantra was supposed to be a secret, but to me it's okay, it's not a secret. So he told me, and remember, I knew nothing. I didn't really know what any of these words meant at all. It was my kind of first exposure. So the mantra was Brahma. Okay. So he said Brahma, and I was supposed to repeat it, so I said Brahma. Okay. And then I said it a few times, repeating him. And so that was it. I was supposed to go home and, you know, sit in meditation and meditate on that mantra. And that's what was Brahma. I had no idea what Brahma meant. No idea. It was. It might have as well been gugubuga. Yeah, I had no idea. No idea at all. Because I had never been exposed. I think by that time, I don't even think I'd read the autobiography of a yogi. That was even before that time. So I really didn't know. I picked up an Upanishad book on Upanishads once, but I had no idea. So anyway, so I remember that I was supposed to meditate on this. And I was living with a group of friends, and we were living in this kind of little house, a bunch of us together. And of course, there was no place to sit and meditate because there were just too many people, and all the rooms were shared and all that. So I went in the bathroom and closed myself in the bathroom and had a towel. You know, there was the bathroom like rug there, and I put a towel down and shut the door. And I sat there, you know, in kind of an uncomfortable meditative pose because my knees hurt. So I'm sitting there, and I'm going, Brahma. I had no idea about anything. Brahma, Brahma, Brahma. So I did it for quite some time. And, you know, my mind did become quiet because it's kind of a japa, you know. So I'm saying this mantra. I was noticing that my mind is quiet. And so then I just sat there with this kind of quiet mind, like this. So and then my mind went, well, now what am I supposed to do? You know, what am I supposed to do with that? I have no idea. I'm sitting with this quiet mind. And I had a lot of kshayas inside, of course, you know, because I had my traumatic upbringing also. So so all these wounded little ones inside and all of these kshayas, all of this, you know. So my mind was quiet, but my unconscious was giving, you know, it wanted its own attention. And so there was absolutely a nice, quiet mind with zero absorption, you know. So it's just like, psh, with nothing underneath, no coming into any kind of ananda, just a quiet mind. Thinking, now what? Now what do I do? And I realized this is boring. Boring. And so I just quit. I just stopped. I just quit. I put the towel back on the rack. You know, I got up and I left. And I don't think I, to my recollection, this was a long time ago, but to my recollection, I don't think I ever thought about it again. That was over. It was completely over. It was just something and it's gone. Okay. So, say you're stuck in a situation. Say you come to this class. Say you come to a meditation class and the thing lasts for an hour. You have no idea about anything. You're supposed to sit in this class and meditate. What is going to happen to your mind? First of all, it has no clue what's going on. There's no viveka between yourself, between your being and your mind. There's been no inner child work or any type of understanding of raga dvesha and how to neutralize that, you know, how to be with Bhagavan. There's no vision there at all. So what will happen? You just have an hour to kill. Okay, you have an hour to kill. So you got to kill that hour. And so what will your mind be thinking about? It will be thinking about whatever your raga dveshas are. You know why? Because just think about this. Say all you knew was that you are a conscious being. And this is samsara. Here we have it. Here. You are a conscious being, this body, mind, sense organs. And you want to be happy because all beings want to be happy. It's kind of like the fundamental or the sadharana, the collective prayer that every being enjoys is, may I be happy and may I be free from pain. Even if you're reading in the Shastra and these Prakarna Granthas like Aparokshanubhuti or, you know, the Upadesha Sahasri, all of these texts that will eventually hopefully be going through, the commentaries will have a commentary. And even in Hastamalakiya Bhasham, it says, every being has this fundamental desire. May I be happy? May I not suffer? You know, in Shankara's Bhasha, he says, even a cow has this fundamental desire. If you hold, because he uses this example in his introduction to the Brahma Sutras, if you hold a bunch of grass, a nice fresh juicy grass, to some cows, you know, you're standing behind the fence and you're holding this grass, they will trot up to you so happily to eat that grass because you're behind the fence and you're holding it and you're not putting out any hostile vibes. And here's this wonderful grass. Sukha. This is a happy experience. And so they will come toward it and they will happily eat that grass. Now, if you're standing behind the fence looking at those cows and all of a sudden you hold up a stick, those cows will just back up immediately. This is not a happy experience. This is one that we want to escape. This is one we want to get out of. So it doesn't matter. All your animals, your cats, your dogs, all beings, you know, they come toward what they trust to give them happiness. They go away from what they don't trust, what they think might cause pain to themselves. And we do exactly the same thing. So now you're meditating. As far as you know, you are this conscious being who is now meditating on something or other. But what is happening to your mind? Because for your mind, it's not something or other. It's not gagubuga. For your mind, it is naturally meditating on ananda. Because ananda is what all beings want. So on the raga side, it's meditating on ananda. On the dvesha side, it is meditating on the things that are a threat to me, because they are taking away my ananda. So those become important meditative figures also. And this isn't as though your mind is saying or your buddhi is saying, let me meditate on all the things I want and let me meditate also on all the things I don't want. It's not saying that. It's just ananda is what drives all of our behavior. Ananda is the main driver. Fromji once used many years ago, the example of even the, for jnani, this is a little bit convoluted, but it works. And the example is true, it's just not necessarily appropriate for this talk, but it's a good example. In the Prarabdha Karma for jnani, right? So when a person gains knowledge, so here's your Prarabdha Karma, a person gains knowledge, right? And so at that time they are free of jnana nishtha, I mean they become free of raga dvesha. So actually there's really nothing really for me to do, I just simply do what is there to be done. I just am Ishwara and I enjoy Ishwara. Being a body, mind, sense organs within Ishwara, I am Ishwara, I enjoy Ishwara. That's it, that's simple. Then the question is, well, why does the body then keep going? Because you have to have that driver, you know. Kama is the driver, is the impetus. And yet the body keeps moving along. And that's because the body is still function. The body, mind, sense organs are still functioning in the Prarabdha Karma, right? But when that Prarabdha Karma means that's going to have many, just naturally, many motivators in it. They're going to have many raga dveshas coming at you from different angles that come from other people trying to pull you into a situation. So then that'll be the driver for that. You have raga dveshas, you have preferences coming, raga dveshas coming up for you as part of your Prarabdha Karma that gives you motivation. It's okay, let me do this. It's not let me do this so I can be happy. That part is gone for jnani. But that motivating factor, let me do this, I want to do this. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. Because I'm a jnani, it doesn't matter. Because my ananda is myself. But those motivators of raga dvesha are still there. It's just that for an ajnani, it's real that it's a binding desire because I'm doing that so that I can be happy. A jnani is not doing that so I can be happy. That's just what's motivating me. Let me do this, let me do that. If it doesn't work, that's fine. Whatever Ishwara wants. I don't really care at all, you know. If Ishwara doesn't want that, that's what Swamiji said when the whole looked like we didn't have enough money to run the course and all of that. He said, if Bhagavan doesn't want this course, I will go to Rishikesh. What is the problem? There's no problem. Really, there is no problem. There's no problem for him. You're all going, for us there's a problem. For him there's no problem. You know, if this is a good work, if for whatever reason Bhagavan doesn't want it. Yeah. So anyway, when the Prarabdha of the jnani runs out, there is no motivator to take another birth. There, the gasoline of the car has run out. There's no motivator because I already am the ananda. Even before I die, I already am the ananda. The ananda is myself. And so what do you think my mind, for Jivan Mukta, for jnani, where do you think that mind naturally goes? To ananda. The mind goes to ananda. That's where it goes. That's the motivator. What is the motivator for raga dvesha? Let me be happy. This object will make me happy. That's the gas. That's the gasoline. What if, as a Jivan Mukta, you've discovered that I am the ananda, not this out here or that out there? The dveshas don't really matter. They're inconvenient, that's all. It doesn't matter. You just be kind. Just do what needs to be done in the situation. Treat everybody as yourself. Treat everybody as Bhagavan. It doesn't matter to you because you're not at stake. Okay? Look it for an ajnani who has no idea that I am the ananda, my ananda is out there. In that case, it really does matter because ananda is what I seek. Every moment, it is ananda, my wholeness, my fullness. So, that being so, think of somebody who is sitting under the tree, you know, meditating, totally in control of their body, relaxing their body, sitting under the tree, But they really have nothing to meditate on. Right? There's no self. So they have to meditate on their body, mind, sense organs. That would be boring. They're going to meditate naturally. If they're not able to direct their mind at something, you know, their mind will direct them. Your mind will direct you toward Ananda. What I need to be happy, what I want, what I'm trying to get toward, the Ananda I'm trying to gain. So I'll start meditating on that, what I want, and then of course, because the mind is very smart, it will meditate on all of the obstructions that are going to stop me from getting that, you know. And then it may also build to meditating on the things that are the obstructions or the things that I really don't want, because those are threatening my Ananda. So somebody who's sitting under the tree or just sitting in meditation with their mind being vimuddha, their mind is deluded, and deluded is kind of not quite a good word. Their mind is very confused. There's no viveka, between no knowledge of my being. So no knowledge of where the Ananda actually is. And so therefore the whole, it's always projected. And so that being the case, even though my organs of action are steady, my mind will not be. You know? First, the mind has to go somewhere. It has to do something. It's not just going to sit in nothing, you know. So where will it go? It goes toward what is the most important. And what is the most important is Ananda. So, that being so, when we do, like now, in our meditations, we spend 15, 20, 25 minutes working on these raga dveshas, working on the little ones, you know, knowing how to be with them, and knowing how to be with my raga dvesha, tracing it back, what do I really want, where's the Ananda really, you know, so that I'm actually gaining more and more that viveka. I'm different. Even when you bring in the inner friend, right at that moment, you are differentiating the buddhi from the raga dvesha, from the things that are causing you pain, and you're coming in a helpful way. Right? That's a viveka. That's a differentiation. And then I can turn that buddhi toward myself. So I'm able to differentiate these raga dveshas, this projection of Ananda. I'm learning how to be with the raga dvesha in a way that is actually very healing and actually resolves the raga dvesha, that turns it into a preference. It needs to be turned into a preference. Otherwise, that's where my mind will... Even when I'm walking around during the day, that's where my mind is always going to be kind of spacing out and going around the raga dvesha. You know, what I want, what are the obstructions? Naturally, you don't have to ask it. It's all associative thinking, and the associative thinking has for its gasoline Ananda, raga dvesha. And so this is why we spend this time with ourselves working on this viveka, you know. Is the Ananda really there, or is it here? Where is it really? And so that when I bring it back home, then I can really look at that raga dvesha or that raga, and you can just ask yourself, what is this really? What is it really about? What am I worried about? What do I need? Especially with dveshas. Dveshas are much more hurtful and agitating than ragas. But every raga has its dvesha because there's obstructions, you know. But the dveshas cause more problems, you know. So what am I really afraid of? What do you do? What do I think this person is going to do to me? Or what do I think this situation, what is it going to do to me? How is it going to hurt me? What am I really afraid of? That's really wonderful. And often what you find is you think you're afraid of that person because they're going to take something away from you. But in the end, what you're afraid of is you're afraid of your own mind. You know, what's going to happen if this person does this to me? Then my mind gets very upset and it puts me you know, into this hurt, this hurt condition, and I feel depressed and unhappy, and I have no ananda at all. So this person is going to upset my mind in this way or that way, and take away all my peace and all my shanti from me. So whatever it is, you need to spend your first part of your meditation until everyone says when you go inside, "Oh, everything's great." You know, do you have any raga dvesha? "Oh no, everything's no problem. No raga dveshas. They're all just they're unbinding desires now." Do you have? Are you sure you don't have any desire? Nope. No. No little ones want your attention? Anybody inside want some attention? Not today. Okay. So then your mind has its own shanti, and then you can just be naturally be with yourself. Probably won't even say those words, but you know, I'm acting it out. But you know, you just be with yourself. But you know, if there's some raga dvesha going on, you have to be with that. That's your sadhana. Your raga dvesha, every little raga dvesha, that is your sadhana, because that's what now is there for you to do that viveka jnanam on, to do that, you know, to do that work. And say if you pass that up, then that's just, you've just lost that opportunity, that you've lost that opportunity. Jung said, in reference to dreams, because he loves to do, he's very much into dream analysis, and if you have a dream, then you should take it as like a letter from your unconscious and really spend time with it, you know? He says, you know, if you don't do that, you've lost that opportunity to do that work, you know? And then he'll always say, "But don't worry, that opportunity will come again and again until you do that work, right?" So you did lose, you just lost some time, that's all. Bhagavan was trying to give you, you know, something to work on, and you didn't pay attention to it, so don't worry. A few hours later, he'll give it to you again, and then he'll give it to you again and again, and again and again and again, until you know, you say, okay, I will do that work. So what we're doing now here is we're in training, because we have all this time, we have a month, for you to actually every day, you know, just learn how to do this naturally, because that's what it is. It becomes just something that you do. You know, like when George Harrison said about the Mahesh Yogi, somebody was talking to him about it. This was after he was kind of being looked at a little bit of a charlatan and whatnot. They asked the Beatles, "Well, why did you go to the Mahesh Yogi? You know, what did you get out of it?" And George Harrison said, of the Beatles, he said, "You know, it's kind of like brushing your teeth in the morning." That's what he said. I thought, that's really nice. You know, you use that. You kind of know how to take care of your mind. You kind of clean. you kind of brush your teeth every morning, and then everything is nice and clean and clear. But I thought that was really clever. Anyway, we have to have that. Just naturally take care of our mind. Take care of these raga dveshas, take care of the little ones inside. That's what we do. You know, if they're asking for help, they give it. If my mind is throwing up a sadhana in terms of raga dvesha, I have to sit with that and be with it. See what it is that I really want, what is really going on there. And then my mind gains more and more shanti, partly because this just becomes habitual behavior, you know. And so my mind gravitates anyway for jnani, your mind gravitates anyway toward ananda, no matter what. If you're an ajnani, it gravitates externally toward ananda. If you're an ajnani, it gravitates internally toward your being or ananda. So as the mind neutralizes and does this work, takes care of the little ones inside, your mind just naturally is with you, whether you're sitting in meditation or not. You don't have to be in meditation. Sitting in meditation. We're sitting in meditation so that we can learn, so that we can take care of our mind, because your mind already knows yourself. As it gains knowledge, it knows yourself. It knows Ishvara. It has habitual behaviors. It has unconscious hurts and things that we need to tend to. That's our task in terms of this Upayanishta, that is our task. So Upayanishta means the taking care of the mind. Our task for knowledge is that Upayanishta, Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. So we have to have a lot of respect for both, not just one. It's not that the one, just the Shravana, necessarily takes care of all of the ills of the mind. You know, unconscious things they need attention, you know. And there's more ways to give it attention. These are just the ones that we know, the ones that I know, the ones that have worked very well for me, and that we're passing on. And there's other things also you can probably do. But they have to work, and they have to be done, you know. And then when you sit in meditation, you won't be called, oh, look at that mithyacharaha over there, that one whose behavior is totally erroneous. The one is just behaving on, you know, just meditating on their raga dveshas. But why are they just meditating on their raga dveshas? Because they're chasing after ananda, just like everyone. All the animals, all the jnanis, even all the mahatmas, it's all ananda. It's, I've discovered the source of ananda. That's all it is. Even if you look at the deities, all of the ishtadevatas sitting, what are they? This is when Swamiji tells a joke. The little boy and his mom took this little fellow to go and pranam to the ishtadevata. It's actually Shiva. It's a beautiful white marble, and I know this one he was talking about. It's the one that's in the Bombay Chinmaya Mission Ashram, Sandeepani Sanalaya. There's a white, pure white murti of Shiva sitting, you know, in meditative position, just like this, in meditation. And so the mother takes the little boy, and they're going to pranam and get some prasad and whatnot. The little boy says, Mom, Mommy, what's Shiva, what's Bhagavan meditating on? What's the Lord meditating on sitting there? I thought that's a really good question. What is he meditating on? He's meditating on the very one you're meditating on. You know, that's what he's meditating on. He's meditating on yourself, which is his self. So that's why, you know, when you sit in that meditative pose and we're doing contemplation and just being with myself, this becomes the murti. This body, mind, sense organs is the murti that is contemplating on the self, the very self that is the self of the whole Ishwara, the whole Ishwara Swarupa, the whole creation that has sattva running all the way through it, so is itself, reflects consciousness. That whole creation is only sitting with me, with the being that I am. Right? So you have to think about that when we do more Ishwara meditations now. The whole Ishwara Upadhi, you know, Upadhi, I mean the conditioning agent in the form of this whole creation, comes from me, comes from the Atma. That means the Atma, because of the sattva, that which reflects consciousness, runs through that entire infinite creation. It is, can be likened to my infinite mind, an infinite mind, which enjoys me, my being. And I am, because for me there's no time and space, I'm the center point of the whole creation. Because I have no time and space and the whole creation comes from me, so the whole creation exists in me. I am at Satchit Ananda. And so the whole creation, right? If you just imagine Ishwara in the form of the whole creation meditating, okay? That's a nice vision. And I'm doing it right now. the whole creation is just with me, the entire creation. Your body, this as a murti, you're just kind of using that because if you think of the Dakshinamurti, murti, that form, or the Yinanyaneshwari, or Lakshmi, or Durga, or any of the, you know, Shiva, they're meditating only on you. And so this body is also meditating only on you. The whole Ishwara Upadhi is meditating only on me, only on the self. And so you can, when you're doing a meditation, you can be meditating just on your being, or you can be meditating on your being being the being of all beings, or you can meditate on your being being the very self of Ishwara. And if my being is the very self of Ishwara, this body, mind, sense organs, which is objectified along with the rest of the world, is really part of Ishwara's body. Just like the cell is part of this body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishwara's body. So now I meditate on the whole. I have whole Ishwara Swarupa, as though visualize that in my mind, to whatever way my mind does that. And then I see the whole enjoying my being. That's the truth of it, you know. And so here for Jnani, your mind is always with Ishwara in the form of this creation, which this body, mind, sense organs belongs to, or it is with the self, which is the self of the whole creation. So that's what happens in meditation, to the degree that my mind is not running after ananda in the form of raga dvesha. Right? So those raga dveshas, those are our sadhana to neutralize, so that my mind can just truly enjoy what we call the karmapala, the fruits of all of this, the fruits, jnanapala we can call it, the fruits of this knowledge. You are the fruit of the knowledge. You're the one who recognizes that yourself is whole and complete and ananda, and you are self-evident. So that's moksha. I say, like, just be yourself. Yourself can never go anywhere. That is it. You are free. But then there's a huge pulla. I call it like a secondary gain in terms of your mind, because your mind also becomes free of raga dvesha. It gains shanti, you know, the shanti that can just wants to be with me. It wants to be with me because I'm the ananda. If I didn't know I'm the ananda, it will want to be with whatever it projects out on. That's just how it is. You can't blame it. It's not the mind's fault. There's some ananda out there. All right. That's where I'm going. That's how it is. It's like the law, you know. And so I have to show the mind, make it see so clearly that, no, I'm the ananda. And then it'll go, ah, that is so wonderful, because nothing ever happens to me and the mind can never be away from me. And so now the suction will not be toward the object, it'll be toward the subject, toward me. So that mind is free. That's the pola of that mind. I am free, and my mind enjoys my freedom. You can say it like that. I am free. The mind, which is mithya, kind of like the clay pot, enjoys the clay, you know, which is free. So my mind enjoys me, which is free. So this mithya achara, in a couple more minutes here, verse, this mithya achara verse is really, it has a lot in it besides being funny when you read it. Yeah. It's a funny verse, but comical verse, but it's a really, really important verse actually to contemplate on. So in this verse, let's chant this verse 7 and then I'll tell you about it.
Yastvim driyani manasa Niyam yara bhater juna Karme driyai karma yogam Asakta savishishyate
Yaha tu Indriyani manasa niyamya arabhate Arjuna karmendriyahi karma yogam asaktaha sa visishyate. So now here he says yahas to, whereas, that to, whereas the one who, as opposed to the mityachara fellow, the Vimudatma, other than the deluded one who is trying to meditate but really has no idea. So for the karma yogi, is in a totally different situation, because the karma yogi is a mumukshu who is gaining this knowledge and is learning about that prasada buddhi, karma yoga. So he says, where's the one who indriyani manasa niyamya? Having controlled the indriyas, having controlled the sense organs, the indriyas, manasa, with the mind, because viveka. I can control my sense organs, I can control this running after raga dvesha with my knowledge. So by means of my mind, the one who's able to control the sense organs, keep the sense organs with me, so that I actually have a choice. I think an ajnani doesn't have much choice. They can have a choice between dharma and adharma, but they're still are going to go toward ananda. And if I don't know myself as the source of ananda, it will be going there. What can it do? You know, where is it going to go? It has to go toward what it believes to be the source of ananda. But for the karma yogi, that one who has the niyamya, has the ability to control, to hang on to the mind, to make decisions, to say you can go toward this or you can go toward that, whatever is appropriate in the situation. Because it is developing that non-binding desires. Right? So here, with non-binding desires, then the mind has a choice, because it has that viveka. So it says that, but whereas the one who, having controlled the indriyas with the mind, adapate, takes to karma yoga, karma yogam, being asaktaha, being without attachment, it takes to karma yoga, karmendriyahi, with the karmendriyas. Karma yoga means this: I am doing karmas, I am doing actions with my karmendriyas, but I am doing it as karma yoga. Karma yoga is not an action, right? Karma yoga is not an action. Karma yoga is the way that I am with the actions, the buddhi that I bring to that action. So for the karma yogi, I remain asaktaha. Asaktaha means that asaktaha means literally, if you read it, it means non-attached. So I'm not attached. What does unattached means? It means that my bindings are not, my desires, my raga dveshas are non-binding. That's what asaktaha means. They're non-binding desires. Because we think, how can I be non-attached? What does that really mean, to be non-attached? It means that your desires, the raga dveshas, are non-binding. If they're non-binding, I have some control over it. You know, I can say, no, we're not going to do that, or yes, we can do that. I can choose, because my ananda, myself, is not at stake, you know. And so I have control, that I have that because of that viveka. So he says, so the person, you know, being asaktaha, that person who is asaktaha, then having controlled being able to control your sense organs, means your sensory pursuits, right? That person takes to karma yoga, that prasada buddhi, everything that we've talked about, being asaktaha, not now have all the desires being converted into non-binding desires. You know, he says that person is vishishyate. That person is highly superior to the mithyachara. Not to the mithyachara person, but to one who does not have that viveka. And Swamiji in his commentary says, superior, better than, it's apples and oranges. How can you even say superior or better than, or, you know, more special? There's no words for it. There's no words for this. The person who has viveka, who is gaining self-knowledge, you know, that self-knowledge allows for you to be free. It allows for you to be free. I would much rather be free than not free. So, and being free is superior to being not free. So it's not like this poor mithyacharaha fellow. You know, everything he's doing is just completely delusional. So everything is mithya. The ananda is out there. It's a miserable situation. He's trying to meditate. It's a mess. Bhagavan, when he gets that viveka and realizes, Bhagavan, this is a mess. This doesn't work. please save me. And Bhagavan will drop a teacher right down on top of you. Good. You needed this. You needed this. This thing in order to really understand the problem. And then you get a teacher, everything will be fine. Because the situation is very simple. It's very simple, but you have to understand it. If you don't understand it, it's not simple at all. You need a pramana, you need a means of knowledge, but that means of knowledge is there. You know what it is, you know who you are, you know what you have to do to help your mind, and why your mind is suffering, why it has so many problems, why we have all this unconscious stuff. It's going to be that way, especially in Kali Yuga, you know, when there's so much adharma and everything, the dharma is falling apart. So yeah, we have a lot of issues that we have to be with, but if we know how to be with them and we're able to take care of those little ones inside and we know how to free ourselves of these raga dveshas, if we really, as we understand, it's not, you know, rocket science. It's really quite straightforward and quite simple. And yourself is here. It's not like yourself isn't here. That Ananda is here. It just needs to be recognized. And so, for a mumukshu, this knowledge is so available. And the karma yoga, the way, really, the way to neutralize all these desires and all these hurts inside on the level of within maya, and we have to do that. It's so available, you know. So it's really, really good. All is well. Let me see what else he says here. So Swamiji went on a little bit about this vishishyate, that the one who's here is superior. You just have to understand that the one who has this karma yoga is unattached and has this asakta, this everything is becoming a non-binding desire. For them, they have gaining this knowledge, they have choice over what they do. Of course that's superior. I would much rather have my knowledge than not have it, you know. At one time we were these mityachadas, you know, trying to figure out what the heck to do, you know, acting silly for only in hindsight. When it was happening, we were trying to figure out how to become whole, complete beings. Really, we all are trying that. Everybody's trying to become whole and complete. And we're trying all different kinds of things. And at some point you realize that nothing that you're trying is really workable because you're still stuck within time and space. You're stuck within samsara. And all of the things that you're doing can only improve upon samsara. Improving upon samsara is good. Eating organic food, being vegan, doing yoga, following dharma, that is all good, but it's still samsara. And so it doesn't give you the absolute well-being that everybody seeks. Even dharma has to be maintained. Yoga has to be maintained. Your diet has to be maintained. If you don't do it, right? So there's this tension there. The atma has no tension. It is free. It is free from your diet. It's free from your dharma, it's free from yoga, it's free from raga dvesha, it's free from judgment, it's free from, you know, lack of self-esteem, it's free from the hurt little ones, their self is also Brahman. So, Om Tat Sat.
Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.